Oh, there we are.
And I couldn't
All right.
Ignore another one.
Before we get started this morning, it's we have some very special guests today who we're going to recognize. And in doing so, honor the National Juneteenth Movement that has a 37-year history here in Portland and is an important community-building event that has not received enough attention and recognition. And the good folks behind promoting its ideals haven't received enough recognition as well. I was honored to participate as Grand Marshal of the most recent Juneteenth Parade and ride with the founder of Portland's Juneteenth celebration, Mrs. Claire Peoples. Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here. And I would like to thank, in addition to Ms. Peoples, Ms. Orna Lee Green, Mr. Bruce Broussard, Mr. Tim Hall, and the entire Juneteenth Committee Chair, and also the Juneteenth Committee Chair, Doris Rush. The mission and meaning of Juneteenth, one of freedom and equality, are important now more than ever. And we need to embrace this annual celebration, and I encourage all Portlanders there to mark their calendars for next year, for next year's Juneteenth celebration. And I wanted to give each of you a chance to make brief remarks, and maybe, Tim, you could sort of introduce, give a little more explanation of what this annual event and celebration is all about.
Good morning. My name is Tim Hall. I work for the City of Portland with the Portland Water Bureau. I was asked by the Oregon Lincoln Bicentennial Committee to work with the Juneteenth folks to put on this event and to have the Oregon Lincoln Bicentennial participate with this group. This is the first time that this has happened. Mayor Adams was gracious enough to honor the African American community by being the first city mayor to actually participate in any of the Juneteenth events. That actually, his presence therefore raised the profile of this community parade and festival, and we had a very successful parade and a very successful festival. As many of you may know, you may not know, Juneteenth actually commemorates the emancipation of all the slaves on June 19, 1865, where Lincoln actually had to send in a General Granger to actually free the slaves in Galveston, Texas. So annually across the United States, in more than 250 cities, people celebrate Juneteenth. In 31 states, Juneteenth is actually an official state holiday. And that's something that our group is going to be working with the governor of Oregon to see is recognized. Thank you.
Ms. Peoples, could you tell us a little bit about your efforts to get this recognition, this annual event started?
I'm sorry.
Would you mind giving, you told me a great story about how you get this celebration started, and I'd like you to share that if you wouldn't mind.
All right. I'm a Okie from Muskogee, and that's Oklahoma. And when I got here, we were working, and we were trying to turn out one ship. To me, that was dull because we had people overseas fighting and needing ships, so I figured we need to have two. And so then somebody said, this is the 19th of June, and I screamed out loud. I said, did you say the Juneteenth? That's what I call it, because that's what we did back there. And so they said, yeah, what have you got jumping up and down for? I said, we've got to do more than one ship tonight. I said, we got people from our own city and across the United States, not just one black. I said, they're both black and white and blended together, just like that. And with that, they said, and you're not playing? I said, playing for freedom and to have all our people back? So she said, what are you going to do? And I said, now hear this, y'all. And when I said that, They started screaming, hollering, and running. And sure enough, guess how many ships we turned out that night? Three.
Yeah.
And so with that, I was thankful. And we kept on stepping. And we've been stepping ever since. And with that, I thank all of you for being here to nudge us all on so we can get on down with the situation. Thank you very much.
Ms. Green, could you please tell us what this celebration and event of Juneteenth means to you?
Well, first of all, I always give greetings to everyone in the name of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. It means everything to me. I met Clara Peoples about 1970, I guess, and we got together in 1972 and had our first celebration in the park in the Lloyd Center, right across the empty park, right across from the Lloyd Center. My husband, the elder Reverend Sylvester Green III, got with Clara, set up booths out there, and we did our first barbecues and different things in the park. We didn't have any media coverage, but a lot of our people knew what it was about. They came out, and he told me, work with this woman because she's done so much. She's, if you look at her history on the computer, you will see all the things that she has done in Portland, Oregon, not only bring the Juneteenth here, but this woman, whether you know it or not, if you look, she started the food bank in her backyard, and that was under Tom McCall. Tom McCall sent her all over everywhere to get that started. That's another story. But she has worked very faithfully since 72. I've worked with her, and she didn't tell you that she got the she got her lunchtime plus 15 minutes more when she told her boss they were going to put out more than one ship. She said she wanted everybody there to celebrate Juneteenth. And she said, if they do it, I'll show you how many ships I'll put out. And that's when they put out more than one. And I was so impressed by all the things that she has done. I vowed to work with her as long as breath is within me. It's been a wonderful privilege.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Thank you very much. Ms. Daly?
Yes, I give great honor to everyone that are here today, and I just thank the Lord for being here. And it's always a blessing and a privilege to meet new faces and see new faces. And I give great honor to Mrs. Peoples and to Mrs. Clay and to Sister Green and to my brethren. I came here in 1995 to establish St. Jude Free Holy Crusade in cooperation, nonprofit organization, and to meet my family. So I established St. Jude Service Center at 5503 Prescott. And on the 19th of June, I see the parade, and I decided to march with them. And we came from church, and I just jumped out with my robe on and started singing. And Sister Clay came running from the front of the parade, and she says, "Here." I said, "What you gonna give me a bullhorn for?" She said, "You out here returning." And ever since that day, I've been coming back from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, acting and carrying out Harry Tubman. So they call me, instead of S.R. Daly, they call me Harry Tubman. And it's a pleasure, and I enjoy working with Sister Peoples and the brethren and the sisters at all times, and just thank the Lord for being here.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you. Ms. Clay, would you like to say something?
Well, Sister, in 1994, we had started something with the support of the Iman and Shafia, at the time Monroe, honoring the ancestors who made the Middle Passage. And we called it the Passage Over. So in 1994, I ran, and we were going to celebrate the passage over on Juneteenth, and I ran into Miss Peoples at Kinko's. And she said, well, we've been doing Juneteenth for years. And we said, next year, we'll get together. 1995, the passage over committee, and Juneteenth from Bethel AME and Clear Peoples got together, and it just exploded into having the parade and Harriet Tubman and the Buffalo Soldiers that you see down there, and Orlee Green supporting us. So I praise the Creator and in the city, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, for giving honor to this
thank
celebration.
Thank you, Ms. Clay. Mr. Broussard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and the council folks. I'd gotten involved with the Juneteenth activities about 7 years or so ago. You can't say no to Clara. And it was kind of like an enlightenment because I, too, had learned. I'd been, as you know, I'm a veteran of the Vietnam War, the Marine Corps. And I thought it was very important that we educate the community as well as our young people about the inclusiveness and the contributions that African Americans played the role in this country back during the Civil War days. And knowing the fact that it was President Lincoln that sent Major Granger to Galveston, Texas, about 2 years later after the proclamations freeing the slaves, that the South did not recognize this. So he went to Galveston, Texas, Major Granger did, and then letting the slave owners know that, in fact, these folks were free. And so what we have been doing over the last year, the last several years, is that my job was to portray that reenactment, if you will. So the parade part is the reenactment, if you will. You'll notice that the military is always up front, carrying the American flag and also the Juneteenth flag. And this year we had the Marine Corps. They were from the reserves here locally. In previous years, we've been working very closely with General Mike Cardwell. I'm sure you know Mike Cardwell. Mike, brother of Bob Cardwell of the Oregonian and whatever. And he's always provided me with other, excuse the French, a white officer. to be a part of the parade because Major Granger naturally was a Caucasian, and if you saw the Gloria movie with Denzel Washington, that would tell you a lot about this. But the fact of the matter is, that's a reenactment, and I'm here to say that the mayor has joined some very notable grand marshals in the past. Federal Judge Ancher Hagerty, he again too was a former Marine, but he was also one of our grand marshals. We've had the first African American general. In the Air National Guard here. He was also part of this deal. O.B. Hill portrayed Frederick Douglass and on and on and on. So, again, that's what we're doing. And as he talked about all of the activities we had, I think that's great, too. But, again, we want to thank the city of Portland via the mayor because I think it's very, very important to get our officials involved in this process to get the folks involved, get our kids to understand what this is all about because mm-hmm. hopefully that will solve some of the civil rights problems that we have today. Again, thank you very much, Mayor. Well, appreciate that very much.
Thank you all for being here. And Ms. Peoples. We gave you one copy, but Ms. Peoples, we wanted to give you a framed copy of the proclamation declaring June 19th, Juneteenth Independence Day.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for everything.
All right.
You
thank you all.
I can honor you with the memento of the Buffalo Soldiers, and hopefully you're invited. To invited. How are you?
Thank
okay.
you. Thank
Welcome
you.
Again, Buffalo Soldier.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Sure enough. Thanks.
Let's go. Sam, while they're disassembling, if I could also just note that on that same day, that morning, there was a rededication of the Lincoln statue in the South Park blocks. And a gentleman dressed as Abraham Lincoln read the second inaugural. And you were one of the organizers of that, too.
That was beautiful.
Congratulations.
Thank you. All right. City Council will come to order. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Can you please read the first communication item, Council Calendar number 861?
Request of Dave Nadal to address Council regarding Mayor Adams.
Mr. Nadal. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning.
This will be in very plain-spoken vernacular, because I was sitting down at the table downstairs with about 20 minutes to say what I thought, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying. I want Sam Adams to struggle vigorously to stay as mayor because I view him very positively as halfway between an establishment politician and a person with real local knowledge. This means that he's more likely to accurately understand the realities of local detail and craft solutions that will stand the test of time. On the current council, only Amanda Fritz also fits this need. I will give Randy Leonard credit for a kinky one-third of this meritorious credit. What I sense in Sam is that he needs to smell, Sam, I think, needs to smell the roses. The extra 20% in time and intensity that type A personalities expend is usually counterproductive. We make bad decisions when we're workaholic, and we will often seek compensatory destructive outlets. Sam, you have all the ability and experience and knowledge to do the job. You should start acting like a relaxed, delegating executive, loosen your collar, maybe even wear relaxed, open-necked African print shirts to council meetings a few times. You're a valuable treasure trove of knowledge and experience and commitment, with a commitment on legislative matters to open public processes. Finally, no one else but Vera Katz and Amanda Fritz care as much about the design and form in the land use and development areas. Second topic, baseball and Memorial Coliseum. I can't understand how a group of architects in what is essentially an intradisciplinary matter can blow up plans to blow up Memorial Coliseum. It's like when artists talk to other artists or musicians talk to other musicians about events within the history of their disciplines. It may provide zero guidance for what should take place in the public realm. I think a small outdoor stadium venue at the Coliseum site would provide a great variety of offerings way beyond baseball for both the Rose Quarter and the Central City area. Third topic is also very different. Building setbacks in land use. As many of the best local buildings show, we have made a great mistake by adopting Florida and Northeast U.S. style setback codes for buildings along transportation corridors. Wide setback bands and wide lawns by our transportation corridors provide areas for gathering, for displaying goods, and for plantings. Wide setbacks often put the parking for a building in the rear, creating sheltered areas for crime and unsafe areas at night. Those are areas also take a lot of extra electricity to light because they're not along the street, so the street lights don't take care of the light. You have to have a whole separate set of lights. Our travel ways, which in the future will be more and more for pedestrians, bikes, and recreation, need to have broad views and an open field. More area also provides for future development flexibility. Finally, and this is the last sentence, broad setbacks are compatible with gradual, wise increases in density. I would offer to provide the council or planning department a set of photos I've taken of many such buildings with wide setbacks along transportation corridors.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Appreciate it. Carla, can you please read the title for Communications Council Calendar Item 862?
Request of Pamela Penrose to address Council regarding USA School of Wrestling.
Good morning, Ms. Penrose.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, all.
Welcome to City Council.
Thank you.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes.
My name is Pamela Penrose. I am a development director, and I'm helping a nonprofit. They bought an old building on 82nd and Russell that probably should have been just blown up instead of trying to remodel it. And we started bringing our construction partners together about March. And I'm here asking support from all of you. And the mayor and the city, and also just to know what's going on this project. We brought the construction team together, and I've given some packets. We also emailed them to all of you, so you have them electronically, plus a little PowerPoint. And as you know, I wanted to show the kind of momentum and that we have as far as partners. Our pre-construction, even though we just started in March, we have almost $200,000 that were in-kind gifts to get us to this point. We're kind of now where we're needing seed money, and I'm asking help with that so we can move it to our next level. On the second page, you'll see that we have on the construction budget a lot of partners already, and they can't give us the value of their gift until we go to the next step in design. So pretty much that is our ask. I would love to meet with each of you, with our team, to discuss how we can help or how we can partner together. It's going to not only just be an Olympic Training Center. It has a great business plan where a membership of the club, we're keeping it and building it. That will pay for the overhead so we won't have to charge youth for training. There's another part of that where we want to bring youth and do programs, structural programs that are very positive to help prevent some of our youth violence and asking partnerships with that. But that, again, until we get the building redone, we need do the first step, and so the ask is please to help us with that, with the seed, and that I can meet with all of you, with our team.
Can I just ask one question?
Absolutely.
Is the site that you currently own, is that directly across the street on 82nd from Madison High School?
It is.
And there's another parcel of land that's adjacent to your structure, correct?
Right.
And there's been some talk of a park there or something down the road. But you own this particular property?
Right.
Okay. And it's there's no urban renewal district there. There's no city park adjacent. So, well, there has been, you know, the neighborhood there has long term been thinking about some park and recreational opportunities that's adjacent to where you are.
Okay.
I don't know how your plan fits in with that, but certainly as Parks Commissioner, we'd be happy to have you visit and lay out your vision. And
I would love that. And you'll see the amount of partnerships and the people that are involved.
Yeah, it's impressive. Thank you very much for all your work, and we'll look to Commissioner Fish to follow up on our behalf.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, Carla, would you please read the title for Communications Council Calendar Item 863.
Request of Charles Deemer to address Council regarding avoidance of recall election.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Good morning.
You just only need to give us your first and last name, and the clock in front of you will help you keep track of time.
Okie dokie. I'm Charles Deemer. I've lived in Portland over 30 years. I teach in the graduate writing program at Portland State. Mayor Adams, despite the AG report, I'm concerned about your relationship, not with Mr. Breedlove, but with the people of Portland. I'm concerned that by your own admission, you lied in order to get elected. I'm concerned about your orchestration of a cover-up to hide facts from the electorate. I'm concerned that your clear violation of the city's code of ethics has been ignored by council, who hasn't even given you a formal slap on the wrist. The mindset in this chamber seems to be unethical behavior. What unethical behavior? Politicians lie, get over it, let's move on. Many of us have not gotten over it, and the only way we can move on is toward a recall election. However, it's not too late for you, Mr. Mayor, and only you, to save the city, the financial, and the divisional, and the emotional burdens and stresses that will result in removing you from office. In Edward Albee's play, Zoo Story, a character says this: sometimes you have to go a long distance out of your way in order to come back a short distance correctly. Mayor Adams, I ask you to come back a short distance correctly now and resign. Members of council, I ask you to come back a short distance correctly and officially, finally, reprimand the mayor for admitted unethical behavior. Let's look at the bottom line here. What does it mean to lie to get elected? It means the election was a fraud. It means we have a mayor elected by fraud. Now think about that. We have a mayor elected by fraud. Fortunately, the citizens of Portland are not the citizens of Tehran. We have ways to deal with fraudulent elections here, and we can overturn it through an orderly process. Hundreds of volunteers are going to make sure this is done. Only your resignation can stop the process, Mr. Mayor. Sometimes you have to go a long distance out of your way in order to come back a short distance correctly. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Carly, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item Communications 864?
Request of Nancy Matila to address Council regarding the dangers of Hanford Nuclear Reservation and future radioactive waste traveling through Portland.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Matila, resident of Portland. If you don't know, or maybe the audience doesn't know, Hanford Nuclear Reservation is about 180 miles from here on the Columbia River in the Tri-Cities area of the state of Washington. In 1989, the U.S. Department of Energy, Washington State Department of Ecology, and the U.S. Department of Environmental Quality came to an agreement that Hanford Nuclear Reservation would be cleaned up so that the radioactive material did not contaminate the environment. Milestones were set in what is called the Tri-Party Agreement, also TPA. Additionally, the TPA stated that no new waste was to be shipped to Hanford until all existing waste was dealt with. After decades and tens of billions of dollars, some cleanup has occurred. However, for years, the funding needed to keep up with the key milestones has fallen further and further behind, and dates of completion have continually slipped. Even with a windfall of $2 billion of stimulus money, doubling the Hanford budget, the USDOE says that critical milestones will have to again be pushed back by years. The most notable one is the permanent containment or vitrification of the high-level liquid radioactive waste from World War II. That's in 177 underground tanks. Over 1 million gallons of deadly high-level nuclear waste has leaked from at least 67 of these tanks, but only 7 of them have been contained to date. The new expected completion date of these tanks from World War II is now 2040. The radioactive contaminants from Hanford, most specifically strontium-90, are currently seeping into the Columbia River. The tests indicate that the plume is 1,200 times more concentrated than allowed by EPA. Now, the USDOE wants to add more waste to Hanford before the cleanup is completed. They want Hanford to become a national radioactive waste dump for energy-producing reactors, as well as the nuclear weapons production. In Portland, we are already at risk from the plume in the Columbia River. If Hanford becomes a national radioactive waste dump, we will be at even greater risk. This September, the public will be asked to give input on a plan to begin truck shipments of mixed radioactive and nuclear waste from other states to Hanford. These trucks will use major roads, including I-84 and I-5, through cities and towns on their way to the Southeast Washington site. I see that my time is up. Do I have another 30 seconds?
Yes, by asking you a question.
Okay.
And then you can and finish. I think David mentioned this issue to me and before, I think it was November.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I asked the city attorney to contact Governor Gregoire's office, who's filed a series of legal actions on behalf of the state of Washington, to see if we could be a partner or file an amicus brief in the matter. Mm-hmm. The timing of that for them, they said, was not quite right yet, but they appreciated our interest. And I absolutely share your concern. They have failed to manage their responsibilities that they have now, and giving them more responsibilities for the storage of more nuclear waste is unthinkable, unacceptable. What are your final thoughts?
Our final thoughts is that we, specifically the city of Portland, can say no nuclear waste trucks through Portland. The study has shown that 800 deaths would be attributable to these trucks traveling on our roads and stopping at our rest stops. That's just incidental cancer deaths. That's the USDOE's report. The Heart of America Northwest also did a study to say what happens if a truck had an accident or, terrorist at at 205 and 84. 300 square miles would be uninhabitable if a truck accident occurred with one of these trucks. We are asking that the City of Portland Council pass a resolution, number one, to oppose what you've already said, thank you very much, but secondly, to pass a resolution to prohibit the trucks from coming through the City of Portland.
So can I just ask a question on that point?
Certainly.
Commissioner Fritz has been leading an effort at the city in another matter, which is our efforts to try to study the health effects of cell phone towers. And as you know, or you may know, that's been preempted by federal law. So Commissioner Fritz is using some other avenues to try to get some relief there. Do we have the authority as a city to regulate who does or does not use an interstate highway?
I can answer that. No. But we can do everything, as you're suggesting, and we've been gearing up for the September sort of window of opportunity for comment. We can do everything we possibly can within the law to make sure that our concerns are out there. And I have deep and grave concerns, as you do. I mean, the federal government has not raised the gas tax since, I think, early 1990s. They've starved the freeway system of the resources necessary to keep it safe, and now they want to seek to potentially, you know, drive through the most toxic, as you've described, we all know, some of the most toxic, dangerous materials on a system that is inherently dangerous. And I really appreciate your early flagging of this to us, and I look forward to working with you in the weeks and months ahead to let our community concerns be heard.
Excellent. And after this, perhaps someone could tell us who we might work with on the council.
Shoshana Oppenheim, I'm Transportation Commissioner Stell, and Shoshana Oppenheim or Catherine Charlo up in my office is working on this.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Can you please, Carla, can you please read the title for Communications Council Calendar Item 865?
Request of William Schneider to address Council regarding Cesar Chavez Street renaming.
I'm back. By happy accident, I might add. I signed up for this a month ago, and it happened to be the morning after, the night before. I'm ready to go. So I think I do have something new to add. One, I've sat through, as you did, 4 hours and 15 minutes of passionate testimony last night. My talk today is literally written on a napkin, as they say. I was up half the night with the emotions of that meeting. It occurred to me, you and I have something, excuse me, in common. I'm a doctor. I spend my life trying to heal people or bring them out of pain and suffering. That's what I've been doing for 25 years, 17 in Portland. You, as the city leaders, elected leaders, you are, in effect, the doctors for this city. You are collectively doctors. Your patient is a living, thriving community, hundreds of thousands of people. So when you make decisions that affect the health of this entire city. Right now, there's a serious health problem in the city, a disease, in effect, dis-ease. The Hispanic community feels they are being wronged. I heard that last night. I've been hearing it for months. I believe it is a real disease. They feel their heroes have not been honored in this city. There's no tangible evidence that they've been honored. No streets, no parks, no schools, no nothing that I know of. Your job, then, is to try to heal this problem, take care of this ease. But what you've heard from the Planning Commission and many people last night and through your thousands of emails, the system is flawed. The instrument you are using or have to use, which is not your fault, is horribly flawed. Almost everyone agrees with this. I would submit as a doctor who has worked with patients for years, if I use a technique that is wrong, I can maim people. I can cause them to be paraplegics. If I adjust someone who has a herniated disc, that could paralyze them. They could lose the use of their arms. It's a flawed technique. even though I may do it with the best intentions and do it flawlessly. It's the wrong technique. The process is flawed. I think you all suspect that or know that. And you've heard the problems with implementing that flawed system. It will cause pain to the people on the street. Overwhelmingly, they're opposed to it. I think if you implement the change of 39th Avenue, even with the best intentions, to heal the disease and to help the Hispanic people and honor their hero, Cesar Chavez, you will cause such outrage on the street and the people who live around the street. These people feel passionately about their street. The businesses feel passionately. You will cause irreparable damage to the city of Portland, which is a vibrant, living, beautiful community. I feel this passionately after studying these issues for many, many months, as you've been studying. So I beg you, implore you, do what is best for your patient. As I'm a doctor, you are collectively a doctor, and I respect that. Please don't step on the people on 39th Avenue and the people surrounding that street and cause irreparable damage, not only now, but into the future, future generations. I think there'll be anger and hatred, future lawsuits. So you've heard me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor, for your testimony. Appreciate it. All right. We're now ready to consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We're at the 9:30 time certain, and we're 45 minutes late. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance time certain, council item 866?
Approve the 10-year tax exemption requested by Rujax One LLC for the Elbert mixed-use apartments.
Hi, I'm Barbara Sack from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm here to present the Planning Commission's recommendation on a request for a 10-year TOD tax exemption for the Elbert mixed-use apartments. Rujax One LLC, represented by Jack Manash, who is here today if you have any questions, is requesting the tax exemption for the residential portion of the project only. The TOD is one of two of the city's multifamily tax exemption programs, and it's available in designated areas outside the central city that are planned for transit-oriented development. This program is authorized by the same state statutes that authorize our central city program. The TOD provides a 10-year tax exemption on the improvement value of new multifamily and mixed-use projects located within a quarter mile of light rail stations and some other transit-oriented corridors. This project is located within a quarter mile of the portion of MLK designated as a main street by Metro. This area was added to the program in 2006 when the council changed the boundaries and some of the program regulations. The Albert will be located on the east side of North William Street, just south of its intersection with Beach. It will be a four-story building that will have three stories of workforce housing. The project will have 72 rental housing units. The mix is three studios, 45 one-bedrooms, and 24 two-bedrooms. Of these units, 18 will be kept affordable to low-income households at or below 60% median family income, and the rest will be rented for market rates, which the applicant projects will be affordable to households under the median income. The ground floor will contain approximately 5,430 square feet of ground floor retail space designed for neighborhood commercial use. It will also contain the residential lobby and 34 tuck-under parking spaces. There will be 15 parking spaces that will be on the surface behind the building. The project also includes motorcycle and bicycle parking and a dedicated car share space. 2 feet of frontage along North Williams Avenue will have planters installed and dedicated to the city, and the entire project will be constructed to LEED Silver standards. Currently, the site is vacant and it's zoned Central Employment EXD with a design overlay. The most recent land use case on the property, a design review case with modifications, is currently under appeal. But one of the conditions of approval for this tax exemption, if you choose to approve it, is that the project will meet all conditions of the design review case whenever it's decided. Uh, The review process of this project entails the Portland Development Commission reviewing the project for the financial necessity of the tax exemption to the economic feasibility of the project. On April 16, 2009, after reviewing the application, PDC's loan committee found that the project meets the financial necessity test because it is estimated that the internal rate of return on the project is 6.21% for the first 10 years after the completion of the project. The city code chapter that contains the TOD regulations requires that the internal rate of return be under 10%. The Planning Commission is required to review the tax exemption request for consistency with the public benefit requirements of the TOD chapter. On May 26, they held a hearing and unanimously approved recommending approval of this project to City Council. Projects for which a tax exemption is requested are required to meet an affordability requirement and provide three other public benefits. This applicant proposed to meet the affordability requirement that requires that 20% of the units be affordable to and reserved for low-income households at 60% median family income. The affordable units are also required to meet the unit mix of the project. There's a chart in the report that shows the total number of units, the required affordable units in each size category, and the number of affordable units provided. This project is actually providing 25% of the units affordable to low-income households. There will be 18 units. They've added two additional studios and one additional one-bedroom to the affordable housing mix. The project is also required to provide three other public benefit options. The three options that they provide are ground floor commercial space, a dedicated car share space, and constructing the project to LEED Silver standard. The Planning Commission feels that this project will provide 72 mixed income rental housing units within a quarter mile of the Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard area designated as a main street. This is located on Williams Avenue, which is a neighborhood collector, a major bike travel lane. There's a striped bicycle path on the street. This project provides a housing that will be affordable to people that perhaps work in Emanuel Hospital or the Lloyd District. There is frequent service transit near the project. The number 6 is a frequent service bus route that runs on MLK. The number 4 bus route runs on Fremont Street, which is less than a block from the project. And the TriMet's number 44 line runs right past the project on Williams Avenue. This project will be built in an area that has experienced gentrification in the last decade, so the provision of more than the minimum number of affordable units to low-income households is supportive of retaining a supply of affordable housing in the area. And the Planning Commission recommends approval of this project on the conditions that the affordable units as specified in the application be provided for the length of the tax exemption, the three other public benefits be provided, and that all building permit requirements, including compliance with the design review case, when it's decided, be met. Jack Manash, the applicant, is here if you have any questions about the project, and Neil Leiden of PDC is also here.
So I have a couple questions. What is the 10-year tax abatement for 100% is worth how much?
Let's see. Okay, PDC staff said that the exempted tax revenue for 10 years would be $1,169,000 and that the net present value of that would be $523,000.
Per year or?
No, this is for the 10 years.
So over 10 years, approximately we're estimating $55,000 a year in present value of property taxes are being waived. Is that right?
Yeah.
So in reading the document and listening to your testimony, the only units that are below median family income of a total of 72 units, is that correct?
Right.
Are 18.
There's 18 that have to be kept affordable to low-income households.
So my question is the balance of 54 units
right.
are market rate. And looking at the box on I actually don't, oh, I guess page 3 of 5 of the Loan Review Committee document, and just some rough calculation because it's kind of hard to discern. The monthly rental, for instance, of a 2-bedroom unit, which would be a market rate, it says the anticipated net monthly revenue is $24,500. So I'm assuming they're approaching gross, the rent per unit, $3,000 a month. Is that close?
You know, I should have the applicant come up and talk about the rent.
Because it's...
Okay.
Commissioner, my name is Neil Iden from Portland Development Commission.
So the you are you familiar with the document I'm referring to, the Loan Review Committee, page 3 of 5? And so I'm are you there at that table?
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at the table that says the two-bedroom units, of which there are 18, brings a net monthly income of $24,511.
Right.
What is the actual rent charged on those?
I have to go to the, see if I have it. For those units, for the 89% MFI units, if you go to the attachment number 3, page 207.
Attachment number 3.
Yeah, that's the income and expenses where it breaks down all the unit types and all the rents.
Attachment 2, you said?
3.
I'm sorry, attachment 3. I don't see an attachment 3. Well, maybe that's it. Attachment 3.
Right.
Okay. And where are you at?
Income expense.
Income expense.
So it would have a unit type. It breaks it down by unit type, number of units, square footage, and the gross.
Yes. So where do I find the actual monthly rent?
So it'd be the fourth column over, gross monthly rent.
And
small print.
And can maybe you can tell me just what that is.
I think for this one, it's for the 18 units. I took an average, so the average unit be about between $916 a month to about, for the 2-bedroom, 2-bath, up to $1,500.
So I guess I'm just struggling with giving a tax break for people who can afford market rate housing. Why didn't we just break the tax credit out for those units that were 60% MFI, do that percentage on the project, and the other market rate housing would pay the taxes they would pay anywhere? What was the reasoning behind that?
Can I say, this is a Todd tax exemption. The purpose of the adoption of the Todd program was to help support transit. While we want to have mixed income projects close to transit, there's no requirement that all the units be low income.
And so I understand that, but there's no requirement that we automatically grant the Todd credit. Is that correct?
Right, but part of the public benefit of this project is that it can provide 25% of the units affordable to low-income households.
I get that, and that's why I'm asking. I'm not suggesting what my position is, but I'm asking why we didn't separate that out and give a credit for that portion and not the other portion. And what I'm hearing is because it falls within the Todd criteria. So these issues relate to incenting projects to happen that what otherwise would not have happened. In other words, if we're giving a tax credit, we're creating an incentive for somebody to do something that they would not do otherwise. Do we know that that's the case here?
Well, based on just the financials, because that's all I'm looking at, when the project comes in for the unit mix, if you want to have this unit affordable at 60% or below, you would need the abatement. I mean, all I'm looking at is just the financial feasibility.
And I get that. I'm okay with that, that part. That's not the focus of my query, those 18 units. It's the 54 units that I'm inquiring about. And I voted for these before, but in a different economic environment.
So what I'd like to do, just because of the time, and these kinds of things should have been well vetted with every member of City Council, I'm going to refer this back to my office and ask that Commissioner Fish sort of also have an opportunity to review. I don't know that he has had an opportunity to review. And I'd also like to establish, and this was Commissioner Fish's idea, and I think a very good one, that all these have to go through his office before they come to council, so that we make sure that, and we're making this change on housing, so this is sort of an in-betweener. But I think a really good suggestion on his part was that all these issues should go through his office before they come to council for his review and approval, and then also touch bases with all members of council as well. So without objection.
Right. I want to raise one more.
We could get all the questions out on the table, and you could write down all the questions and concerns. And
that would be very helpful if I knew Commissioner Fish was reviewing these issues on a case-by-case basis. That would, if I had a doubt, I would give the benefit of the doubt in that case. But I did not find in here in the ordinance the, and maybe I missed it, the requirement that an annual financial statement be received by the PDC to review the prospectus that was submitted to you by the developer to justify you giving the abatement. Did I miss that in here?
It's if you look at the now therefore, it's before.
It's four?
Yeah.
Oh, right there.
So let's capture all the questions. Do you have any more, Commissioner Leonard?
Nope.
Commissioner Fritz?
Is the lead certification a condition of approval?
Yes.
It doesn't seem to be in the ordinance. I want to thank citizens for sending in testimony ahead of time. I'm concerned about the appeal, which could reduce the size of the building and reduce the number of units, because it appeals the modifications to the rear setback, to the interior parking lot landscaping requirements, and to loading space requirements, which could result in a smaller building. The analysis is based on the number of units proposed, and so presumably that would be different if there were fewer units proposed. So I need some clarification about how that would work.
Commissioner Saltzman?
I would just like to know, the affordable units, do they mirror the larger number of units in terms of bedroom size? So in instance, I don't know if there are three bedrooms, but if there are there affordable three bedrooms? If there are two bedroom units,
yeah, the maximum affordable? Maximum unit size is a two bedroom, two bath.
Okay. So I guess my question would then be, how many of the two bedroom, two baths are in the affordable?
Six.
Right.
So six out of the 16.
72. So out of, we have three studios that are affordable, 9 1 bedrooms, 6 2 bedrooms.
Out of 72 units altogether?
Right.
Okay.
There's a chart that shows the unit mix, what would be required to meet the unit mix.
Well, ask Commissioner Fish to observe. Okay.
Mayor, I'm sorry.
I'm done.
So a couple of other points. We did, at the mayor's request in the fall, the first annual report on tax abatements, mm-hmm. which was a work product that both the Housing Bureau, PDC, and the Planning Bureau worked on. What I would say to my colleagues on any of these tax abatement programs, if people at any time feel that the program has outlived its usefulness, or if we ought to revisit the public benefit components of some of our programs, or if they want a clearer demonstration of a public benefit, in my view is that is part of the ongoing oversight and review process, which is very healthy to make sure that each of these is meeting some kind of goal. So I would, as the housing commissioner, welcome a regular review to make sure that they're meeting the goals. And I appreciate Commissioner Leonard's points about distinguishing between units that are affordable and not affordable in any of our projects. The Todd program has a sort of a more overarching goal, but I still think that's a good question for us to ask. And I, again, if there are ways to improve the program, just like we focused last year on improving accountability, if there are ways of improving the program, as your housing commissioner, I'm very interested.
One thing I've recommended over the years is, if in having the prospectuses prepared, If we could just separate the developer from being responsible for preparing that and have the PDC contract with whoever that is in the private sector that develops those financials and then have the developer reimburse you for the cost that it breaks the chain of.
At what stage are you speaking of when they come
whatever
in for
stage
the
it is that you look at to give the abatement, whatever that
because,
is?
Because, I mean, that's the job of PDC, Housing Development Finance.
You review the documents given. What I'm suggesting is you actually develop the documents and you break the chain of the relationship between. Well, let me finish before you got to hear what I say before you can answer it. What I'm concerned with is when the developer, and this has been a longstanding concern I've expressed, when the developer hires the people to do the prospectuses, they develop a prospectus that suits what the developer's argument is to you. What I'm suggesting is I'd like to have a more objective, in the best of all worlds, financial prospectus developed that you hire as the PDC and then the developer reimburse you for those costs. So you get a more objective look at the balance.
Yeah, I understand your point, but that's the role of my job, because my job is to take an impartial view of it as a...
Of what they give you, and I'm just suggesting if you're the one asking the questions of the person that develops the prospectus, so, I suspect some of the answers might be a little bit different than what the developer...
I think you want to say, Commissioner... take that under advisement. We'll kick it around, and we'll get back to you with our thoughts.
And
how's
that?
Back to the commissioner.
If I could add just Barbara on your list, I got a couple of emails from a neighborhood association and one from a concerned citizen, and the three primary issues that bubbled to the top are the timing of our action. Should we be voting to approve a tax abatement when the land use process is not complete? Commissioner Fritz alluded to this, and particularly where the design review process is not complete. So just some guidance as to what we've done in the past and what the potential consequences would be and why we're doing it in this sequence. Number two, there is a question has been raised that the LEED Silver certification somehow cannot be met, or that the applicant's view of that is something less than what the U.S. Green Council Building Council will certify. If you could just clarify that, and I'll show you the email we got on that point. And the third has to do with the other public benefit that's been selected by the applicant, which is a dedicated car share space. And in the guidelines that you furnished to us, space has a S in parenthesis at the end. And I think a question has been raised as to whether a single space meets our guidelines. My understanding is it does, but I'm just curious what our history has been, how many car share spaces are required in our practice in order to qualify for the public benefit. And we'd be happy to we'll schedule a time just to get a briefing in my office, and then we'll from there address the concerns raised by my colleagues. And Mayor, I appreciate your this protocol that you've set forth. We will review these and then make recommendations to you and my colleagues about proposed action.
Great. So I'm going to refer this, unless there's objection, to Commissioner Fish's office.
We have five people signed up to testify.
Please come forward.
The first three, please come on up, are Forrest Parsons, Robert Hodge, and Tracy Olson.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. You need to only give us your name, your first and last name, no address, and you'll each have 3 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
I'm Robert Hodge. I'm a resident of the area, and I recently found out about the situation happening with the Albert Apartments, and I'm here to voice my concern along with these other folks. So I'll let them go ahead and defer to them.
Okay, great. Who would like to go first?
I can go.
Great.
My name is Forrest Parsons. I'm a neighbor. I'm just outside the 150 feet, so I missed out on the original notices that were sent out. And basically the main concerns I have is just that since the tax abatement decision, maybe shouldn't be considered an emergency under Section 2 Ordinance number 866, because there will be no delay in the construction of the transit-supported housing in the project. and because the developer will need to wait for the final land use decision prior to the construction, similar to the email that we sent out, and that there's no reason to process the tax abatement request ahead of the land use decision. And